No playing.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to D20 Dudes Tabletop Role Playing Podcast. We're Dad Shad Dare Tapic. I'm Derlin.
Hi, Dylan. I'm Molly. What are we talking about today? I've asked you three times.
I just told you, I'm going to gripe about shit, is what's going
to
happen.
What are we griping about? You said you didn't have time to read, so can I be on the same page today?
It's not even necessarily that I didn't have time. It's just like, it's been a lot of chaos and a lot of not sleeping as much as I should.
That's called the holidays.
I can't focus.
Mm-hmm. It has.
I can't focus on getting the reading done.
It do be.
My microphone.
The holidays. It's just,
yeah. One correction in the last episode is I said GURPS was like a system where like a thing and you would make a character and then they would go and they would get like all this stuff done, like to the point where you would just keep rolling events to see what kind of like starting stuff your character could have until it's possible your character dies before they're even completed. It's not GURPS that I was thinking about. It's Stars Without Number. That was oopsie. I was mixing up a couple of things.
How could you?
I've started reading on GURPS. Which, some interesting stuff there. Like, it's like generic universal role-playing system is why it's called GURPS. And it's literally just, like, a whole bunch of super generic rules so you can plug it into whatever you want it to be. But that's interesting, and I like the concept there. But, man, Molly, everyone knows that I'm a huge fan of horror.
Yes.
I love horror. But it's so good to find any good, or it's so hard to find any good horror. It's like bad, all of it. It's just so bad everywhere.
Yeah.
And I started like thinking about, like, there's just like a lot of specific things happening in many different spaces that is causing horror to fall into like very cookie cutter things.
I mean, to be fair, I think horror is best when it's terrible because it's funny then.
I mean, there's something to be said about something that's like really schlocky and like you're just schlocky. Having a good time. Yeah. But like
buckets of whenever fake you blood see, or real blood, as it yeah, were, depends whenever, on the scene.
Yeah. People using pig blood is really funny.
Right.
There's like a lot of things out there. Like here, one of my biggest gripes right now, whenever I was like in high school and like right after I graduated. I was like really big into creepypastas. Like there was like this whole huge thing, especially around like 2008, where like people were just like, the internet was really becoming like a big thing. There was all kinds of stuff on the internet. It wasn't like a only some people have it. That's like in the early 2000s and into like close to where the 2010s began, the internet became just incredibly ubiquitous. Like it was impossible to not have internet access.
Old people finally started admitting that it wasn't just a fun thing, you know.
Yeah. And so like a lot of new communities started cropping up and a lot of new like interests started becoming more publicly explored. And I think like so early creepypastas were very, very experimental. You would get like for some reason Jeff the Killer was like really big. Molly, have you ever read Jeff the Killer?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest here. I like creepypastas. I've listened to a fair number. In fact, I listen to some now when I go to sleep. But I have to tell you that most of them are all exactly the same. And they're all written by edgy 13-year-olds. And for what it was, that's not bad. But, like, they're kind of cringe.
Well, that's part of what I'm going to get into, is Jeff the Killer was really, really bad.
Yeah, no, Jeff the Killer is cringe as fuck, man.
It's so poorly written. It's like, it's written, I'm going to use the Creepcast Hunter Hancock's words here. Great podcast if you don't know them. It's Hunter Hancock, Meat Canyon, and Wendigoon talking about creepypastas. And it's incredibly entertaining. But the way he described Jeff the Killer was like, if you tried to make a superhero out of a school shooter. And yeah, it really kind of reads that way.
Which is where it's like, just the like, no one understands me, edgelord cringe, just personified. Like, I don't know what it was about that, like, chunk of the thousands where everyone really wanted to be, like, edgy. Just edgy. But, just really just edgy, honestly.
But, like, to its extent, like, for some reason, Jeff the Killer just blew up. Like, he's one of the creepypasta legends. You can still see images of him, like, floating around.
What the hell was his name with the tentacles and no face?
Slenderman,
yeah. And everyone knows about the Slenderman stabbings.
Yeah, Slenderman I was actually a fan of because...
I mean, it's cool. It got cringe. It's just like, what is today's creepypasta? The Backrooms. It's just like The Backrooms, where The Backrooms starts out super creepy, very vague, and then people keep adding more and more to it, and it just gets weirder and dumber.
Yeah, but to its extent, I actually like The Backrooms for that reason, because it's become like its own thing.
I know,
like it's kind of stands cute. On its own 2 feet.
It reminds me of creepypastas of old, but like I said, like I've learned some new stuff, and I'm like, some person just like fanfic inserted themselves into this universe and did this.
But like to things like Slenderman and The Backrooms. And even things like Jeff the Killer, where it was just like objectively bad. Like mm-hmm. Slenderman started out like very vague and kind
of
creepy.
Oh, I love the like edited pictures of Slenderman doing like old timey stuff. Slenderman was really cool.
Yeah, it was like a very fun concept. Until people started
getting stabbed, that was weird.
Yeah, and it just started like going too far.
Plus, there was like, the whole like people playing the Slenderman game where it turned into "Give me $20."
Yeah,
that was really cool. It was great. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it had like a ton of fan games, and mm-hmm. like there were three or four YouTube channels.
I think that the important part of Jeff the Killer is that I think it fell into like the Tumblr romanticization of the character more than Slenderman did, which made it more cringe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it was written by a kid for sure, and it was definitely kids who like latched onto it and made it into the thing.
And they were like, "Jeff the Killer, I could be your friend, or I could be your lover," says 14-year-old girl. Not that I'm sexualizing them, but like when I was a 14-year-old girl, I was like, "Fictional characters? What the fuck? They're the hottest things I've ever seen."
2D girls are best.
2D men. They're so easy because I don't have to worry about them actually touching me.
So there's that whole like era, and we've got a little bit of it still going on with again things like The Backrooms and like Siren
Teenagers,
Head, pretty recent.
Teenagers do be teenagering, to be honest.
But like as bad as a lot of those things that came out of that particular era of like horror stories and like kind of like the campfire tales that people would tell on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it wasn't great, but it was still experimental. People were exploring new avenues. People were like, I'm just going to take this idea and run with it until I have a finished product.
Most famous one is just the SCP in general.
SCP.
SCP started out as creepypasta.
It is such a monolith. God, what was the one? There was like a series called like The Holders or something, where it was like a bunch of artifacts that you had to go through like these horrifying rituals to get your hands on for some reason.
I'm not sure. I've also been watching some dude with a very deep voice reading SCPs, like a couple of them before bed, because it's very relaxing and I can look at my phone while I do it. There's a lot of SCPs now.
Oh yeah, there's thousands.
They have like a whole fucking lore. I mean, more than just the dumb game that Markiplier used to play a lot. Like,
there's like 15 extended SCP canons now because it's like, all multiverse theory and shit now,
like,
too.
It's so complicated. It's like, SCP is actually, although they added more to it, some of it became really stupid and was obviously just like people doing whatever. And then other ones where they continued on the anonymous posting of random creepy stories. And that's nice. But SCP is special. In my book, anyway.
It's
a little
good shit.
Some of it is kind of fan fiction-y, and then some of it isn't, which is such a breath of fresh air.
There's some very talented writers in that community. Amazing. But
dude,
here's something that
so
gets me.
I've read so much good fan fiction. If we're going to talk about like anonymous on the internet writers, I've read incredibly well-written fanfics, and I've read some horrible, awful, terrible ones.
Yeah. Well, here's where I'm trying to circle to. So you mentioned like listening to people like reading creepypastas and stuff, and there are like tons of those channels now that like Lighthouse Horror, Creepypasta, Mr. Creepypasta, fucking The Dark Somnium. And they're incredibly talented narrators who take stories that people have written and kind of like produce them and make them into these interesting things. And so I listened to them a lot and I started noticing this trend, and I fucking saw a lot of this because there is a particular scary story subreddit called r/no sleep.
Yep.
Which there again are some very talented writers.
Yeah. There's a couple of new creepypastas that came out of No Sleep. And there was a couple of things where they just keep rehashing them over and over.
Yes. And that's the thing that's really starting to grind my gears on a lot of this. The No Sleep subreddit has this rule in place that every single story has to be told from the perspective of somebody who is like relaying events from a first person perspective. Like something happened to them and they survived it, or something is happening to them and they're telling the story. And that is interesting in a vacuum, but now you've got it. Like No Sleep has become kind of the biggest aggregate of this form of like horror storytelling on the internet, such as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, that particular framework that they put their community into cuts a lot of threads. It means there's like 15,000 stories that would have been great, would have been awesome, that now aren't going to be told because somebody posted them No Sleep, it didn't follow this specific rule, and they shot it down, and somebody is going to be demotivated for that reason.
Well, really, that's just the cycle of popularity in general, because this cycle happens all the time. I mean, look at analog horror. Analog horror wasn't really like a really big thing until the Mandela catalogs, but it did happen before. And like, it just, this like found footage and blah, 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 things gain popularity as people realize, oh, this is actually kind of cool, or they rehash it back from previous generations.
But I've seen it especially like a lot in that subreddit. They do kind of have like these ups and downs of like certain popularities, and because they're all written within that certain framework, so many of these stories become so incredibly samey. Like, I will listen to like Lighthouse Horror and The Dark Somnium, and they predominantly take their stories from No Sleep, and I can scan through a feed. It will be like, here's your recommended videos for today. And it'll be like 15 videos from these channels that I watch to get kind of like the scary story fix. And I will discard 10 of them because I will see in the title, it's like blah, 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 has a list of strange rules. That one's immediately out. Oh, I don't care. I've heard that story 500 goddamn times. Stop telling it.
I think I've read one story with that in there, and that basically set me up for every other story that was just like that for the rest of my reading life. They're all basically exactly the same. They're all kind of weird, and you're like, how the hell is anyone supposed to remember all of this? And whatever. I have actually seen one. I remember someone reading an SCP that sounded a lot like it, but because it was in the SCP formats where they had like test logs and so forth, and descriptions of what it was supposed to be, and not like the first person sort of like, oh, I found this note that says that I'm going to die if I don't follow these random rules. It was better.
Yeah.
Still the same. The moment you see, better.
The moment you see that particular phrase, it's like, you know exactly how the story is going to go. Oh, here's this list of rules. They were weird. I didn't follow them. Bad shit happened. Started following them. My boss gave me a raise because I bitch at him. Some shit like that. It's like, you know exactly what you're going to get before you even go in.
Mm-hmm.
And then because they're all told in like the same kind of first person perspective,
mm-hmm.
Where like they had to have survived these events, you're getting also a lot of these stories that are like, I don't know if anyone's reading this, but blah, blah. It's like, shut the fuck up.
Or we have a lot found like retired expert stories like the Stairs in the Woods. Lots and lots of stories have attempted to copy that same format, or technically that one was probably copied from a previous format, but it made it super popular.
And so like part of this, like, it's become so incredibly frustrating to see like horror, I love it as a genre, and it has just stagnated so hard because of these, like, one, the frameworks that these big communities are placing them in. Like, I despise No Sleep because that whole has to be a first person thing, has to be like found footage or someone sitting like that stifles creativity. I think in like a smaller community, that would be fine. But whenever you've got like literally the largest community that there possibly is out there for creating horror medium, it should be open. It should be a more free experience. People deserve the chance to explore their creativity and have that kind of audience that they can present it to. Because if they go to one of these other places that isn't getting anywhere near as much attention because Reddit's not going to present in the community, or like it's not going to show up high on the search engines, I could write a million incredibly cool horror stories and no one's ever going to see them because they're not within this specific framework. And I think that just kills creativity.
Why?
I think that is the death of it.
Why am I getting the feeling that you recently submitted a story to our No Sleep and it didn't gain any traction?
I've never submitted a story to No Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I joined the community on Reddit when it was still kind of early on. And even then, like, I was reading them and like some of them were good, some of them are bad. But it really, even like as the community was just forming, you could see that because of that particular framework, it caused a lot of specific trends to start popping up where, like, if they don't include X paragraph to explain why, then the story is immediately going to get shot down. So everything kind of had like the same conclusion. And it was irksome. I read like maybe 10, 15 stories. And then at that point, I already started seeing these repetitive trends. I was like, okay, this community is really not going to be for me, because regardless of how interesting someone's idea may be, even if that person does create like the next big thing, there's now just going to be 30 more of those every day.
Mm-hmm. I also wonder if, like, say, No Sleep, some of the more popular horror things have gotten a lot of traction and have it stayed samey, because it's a little like YouTube, where a lot of the reader base is actually children, and children tend to like repeating things a lot, like, yeah, a lot. Not that that's a bad thing for kids, but like, if you're wondering why there isn't more like creativity and more choice, I guess, because I also get choice fatigue when I get into really into something and I'm like, there's nothing new. It could just be because, like I said, popularity. And popularity is driven largely in a marketing sense by children.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. Like, I like the medium so much. And I'm coming to learn, like, a lot of things about, like, my particular enjoyment of horror comes from certain things. Like, I like a podcast a lot more than I like a movie. Because there's a lot of things, reading a horror story, you get that whole like theater of the mind thing. And so whenever you're talking about stories like It and H.P. Lovecraft's Anything and fucking like really a whole lot of Stephen King shit too, a lot of the work is done by you impressing your own discomfort onto it. Like, knowing you're in a tense situation and kind of like deep down understanding what would scare you most in that situation. And so that you project that onto the story, and that makes it scarier for you because now you're scaring yourself.
Excuse me.
There's a certain amount of like ambiguity to things that makes a horror story hit home a lot better. I like a podcast a lot because you get that same kind of like, you can project like what you think it is and like how you would perceive this and like what would make it the worst for you. But you still kind of get that like that produced where like they have their like particular style and you can tell that there's a lot of work gone into it and they make it into a show while still giving you that ability to project your own image of what things are onto it. And then when you get to things like movies and television, they really take away all of that mystique. There's very few horror movies that I genuinely enjoyed because it's just like, the monster's on screen now. Ooh.
I actually disagree. I have never gotten the heebie-jeebies from a podcast. I've gotten it from a couple of books, but generally, the more degrees of like senses you take away from something, the less creepy I find it, because I'm more easily able to separate myself from it. Most movies are not scary, but there have been a couple where the director has really gone out of their way to make sure that if you're watching, you see things that the like the main character doesn't see, or even some people in the audience. Like when I watched Hereditary is scary. Very creepy. There's a lot of like very quiet things that you only see, you can't just listen to, that you'll catch.
I mean, there's definitely ups and downs, like every medium. And that really kind of goes for everything. Like people are going to have their preferences. So I've always, and I guess part of it for me is that like, I'm so difficult to scare anymore.
I mean, I'm almost impossible to scare. I love watching other people get scared. I love watching horror movies with people that are terrified of horror movies, like my friend Cheryl. I remember I watched Hereditary with her, and I like pointed out something that she had no idea about, and she was freaked out.
and that vicarious horror that's pretty funny, but
I have had a couple of movies where like something I can predict pretty well what's going to happen, but sometimes something has caught me by surprise, and it's always been movies. It's never been books or like listening to something.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot.
Movies are a great way. The director can put in a lot of red herrings. Whereas I think with like books, obviously, but what they're really doing is they're just like omitting details. Whereas like in a podcast, you don't really get to like hear the details. But in a movie, you can see everything that's happening in the background as well.
Yeah. I think that definitely depends on the podcast, because like the one I don't actually listen to a whole lot of horror podcasts, like because most of them out there are going to be things like here's readings of SCP files or here's readings.
I like
of
the true crime ones. Mm-hmm. True crime history ones are really good.
But there's one that I adore. There's a horror podcast that is just so my shit. It is everything I ever wanted out of a horror podcast. It's called The Magnus Archives.
Oh yeah,
it is
you
so
talk about that a lot.
Fucking good. I love the Magnus Archives, with Old Gods of Appalachia being a very close second. Those two are so cool because they are new creative ideas. They're very highly produced. They're, even if they don't directly scare me, and there were some things in the Magnus Archives that I do kind of get like a ooh, oh no. But they do such a good job of making it so incredibly entertaining. Not just on like a turn your brain off kind of level, but like actually being like intellectually stimulating, and that like, here's a new idea and you're going to have to process this as part of the greater whole. And so it gives you really something to like work on. And I really, really enjoy that aspect of those two podcasts.
Hmm. I guess it could also culminate in how are classic horror elements scary compared to, say, I don't know, fucking climate change.
Yeah, there is a lot to say.
Yeah, like, how do you define, like, real fear? Because, like, say, 1984, when I read it, was pretty scary. Like, it's not meant to be a scary book, but the idea of constantly being watched and having every part of your life monitored to make sure that you're not doing something wrong, whether you know it or not, is very scary to me.
Yeah, and I think that's actually another good point of like,
what is horror?
There's just,
right?
Yeah, there's just so much of it out there now. Like, it used to be, I remember, like, I grew up in the 90s, and there were some people I knew that were horror fans, but it was like VHS tapes and shit at the time. And so if you were a fan of that stuff, it wasn't like everywhere. You would have to go to like a movie store, like a rental store, and you would have to specifically find like horror stuff. It would have to be something that you were into, and there's not really going to be like a big community that you can be a part of. It wasn't marketed a whole lot. You had like some really good
people do like spooky
I guess
shit.
For yeah, really good for the time stuff that would come out, because like, I know like the Friday the 13th movies are very popular, the Freddy Krueger movies are,
and
they're just like, they're dumb fun. Mm-hmm. They're just stupid movies.
Spooky,
and I'm sure some people found them scary.
Spooky horror is fun. It's a little like a haunted house. Like, none of it's really real. And the people that believe in spirits, you should always take with a grain of salt, because it could just be their brain making connections when whatever happened is fully innocuous. But like, right. It's hard to be afraid of things when I have much larger problems.
And again, there's just so much of it out there now, like horror movies and horror media. It's just, there's so much of it, mm-hmm. that you just kind of, you're just indoctrinated to all of it. Like, how do you scare somebody whenever they've seen a big spooky monster a dozen times before? And that's not going to get them anymore. Like, where do you go from there?
That's why they rely so heavily on jump scares and loud noises. Although, the new, what was it? The new, Army of Darkness? Is that what it is?
I don't know. I haven't seen any of those movies.
There's like a remake of the one that had them in a cabin with like the Necronomicon.
It sounds like Army of Darkness, but I would make that connection because I know the Necronomicon's in it.
I think
Evil Dead, yeah.
Evil Dead. So there was a remake of The Evil Dead, and it was actually pretty creepy. But they did, like, the way that they did, like, the cinematography and everything, and, like it was pretty cheesy and stupid, but they did make it pretty creepy, which is great. I think the hopelessness is actually kind of more horror by itself than just, you know, zombies. Oh, she ate glass. That's kind of scary. Oh, you can't get away from it. Oh.
Yeah, there's like a certain level of like I can get into, like, every now and then there'll be something like, oh, this guy had, I think it was like in one of the Saw movies where somebody was thrown into a pit full of like syringes. And that, like, the idea of that just makes my skin crawl.
That sounds painful.
But like, that's not scary.
It's not like, it's scary in like a survival kind of way, but not in like a spooky way. So I guess that really is the horror difference. Feeling. Like, is it spooky or is it just scary? Yeah.
So it then becomes like, what do you do to make things scary? And I do think there is something to be said, like, yeah, like a feeling of hopelessness, like tapping into like those greater emotions rather than just, oh, there's a monster.
Deep-seated emotions. Like, that's one of the things that Hereditary did really, really well, is it made you feel super unsettled and uneasy the entire time, which I think is one of the key things for a particularly good horror movie. Not like a good quote-unquote horror movie that you'll sit there and go, to. I mean, like, something that makes you feel deeply unhappy.
Yeah, like, if I come out of something feeling just upset, that's better.
I'm like, wow, that movie was really good. I feel like taking a shower.
Yeah, so it's just really hard, I guess. Like, popularity, it is such a big thing. And, like, movies are definitely, like, they're probably, like, the progenitor of that kind of issue. Where, like, a movie is made to be sold. It's made to make money. And so, like, if one movie does really well, then a lot of movie studios are going to be like, well, we want a dozen more of these because we know this is what's going to make us $1 million on the movie or whatever.
That's probably why a lot of creepypastas are so compelling at first. Like, the back rooms is because they're just sort of a thing someone put up on the internet.
Yeah.
No real, no real desires behind it just being popular.
But there was like there's a feeling I haven't had in a long time. Like, really, again, like, it was right after I graduated high school, and there were like a lot of things that kind of culminated into me basically having a 2-month-long panic attack. Or like right out of high school. I mean, right out of high school.
I can relate.
We moved. We moved from in the middle of town to this kind of in the middle of the woods, bumfuck nowhere house. I didn't have a car, so it was like, I'm just kind of stuck out there unless I can get a ride from somebody. And of course, like, Mom and Dave were working until like 6 o'clock at night. So for the most part, it was just me out there by myself, not being able to do anything about that. And then that was a point in time where also a thing that would happen a lot, like that first month or two when we lived out there, is for some reason in the middle of the night our power would just go the fuck out for no reason. We would just lose electricity for like 2 hours every night.
Damn.
And it was at that same time that I really started getting into like creepypastas. So I was starting to read stuff like Slender Man and like La Muerta Blanca. There's just like this whole big website that was just nothing but creepypastas, and I would just stay up all night reading those. And whenever you're already like you're in a new place, so like you're kind of out of your comfort zone, and then the power's going out all the time, and you're constantly reading scary stories, and like you're always out in the woods, and it was just I had built myself up to be scared constantly. And so that made, even if the stories weren't necessarily great, I was just always on edge. Like, and it's my fault I did it to myself, but I was always on edge. So it really gave those horror stories like a bite to them that they probably wouldn't have had otherwise. Like, if I go back and read, the one that always stuck with me was called La Muerta Blanca. And it was about like, on every mirror and every doorway between you and her, whenever she's entering your house to murder the fuck out of you, she would knock so many times so that you know that she's coming, but there's nothing you can do to stop it. And that one, that one just got me. That one really got under my skin at the time. And like, it would be one of those moments where like, okay, it's 3 a.m, power went out, I'm just sitting here in the dark, and the new house is settling. So it would sound like knock, knock, knock. And I would be shitting myself, Molly. Just losing my goddamn mind over it.
Yeah. I think this was actually a published short story before it got on the internet, but my worst scary story was, I think it's called Baraska. It's about like a mining town, and this family moves in, this kid's dad and his older sister and him. And for some reason, his sister goes missing, and there's a bunch of weirdness. And I don't know if I should spoil it, but like, it makes me unhappy, deeply unhappy.
There's something to be said for, I do like the setting of just like the kind of isolated town with this insular culture, and like there's very clearly something not great going on behind the scenes.
Just like casual evil, I think, is probably the most horrific thing of anything.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it too. Because it's just so ubiquitous as part of the culture. Like, just in that the setting.
Casual, like, just doing of the thing or just ignoring of the thing. Just, dislike. Don't like it.
And, like, I know there's, like, scenes in those kind of movies where, like, the new person comes into town and there's, like, 10 people that just stop and they just stare at them. And, like, that's unsettling to, like, just suddenly have that many eyes on you. And then, like, that can just happen.
Can be fully like not significant at all, or it could be. You never know. It's a horror movie, but so of course it is. But in real life, big question marks.
There have been moments at work where like I'll just like look up, like I'll be cleaning something and I'll look up, and there's like 6 or 7 customers and they're all just looking at me, and it's just like, oh, ooh, icky, ooh, no, go away. I don't want you in here anymore. But yeah, that's about our time for tonight anyway. I don't know. I just got a lot of gripes about the state of horror because it's just not interesting or fun anymore most of the time. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not in good circles for it.
Nah.
Games are...
The internet is good. Actually, if we're going to talk about horror games, I like... So like I said, the number of degrees into getting into horror that I can remove... I can totally deal with horror, no problemo. But putting me into a video game where I have to control the player and I suddenly can fail. Terrifying.
There's a lot of them. Like, because like the jump scare horror is so fucking pervasive in video games.
That too.
Like, there's almost every game is just that.
I mean, that's like, there's not. Fine. I was talking more about the like, things are going to hurt you if you don't shoot them in the head correctly. And then my big old fat fingies go, you know, don't like it.
But I don't know. Like, there's certain horror games. Most horror games I just don't like because it does come down to like, there's a monster. It's going to jump scare you. Oh no! It's going to do a violent sting.
It's going to chase. It's going to chase you. This is also why I like some of those like more old school like 64-bit games.
Well, there's so few games that really... I think Phasmophobia is the horror game that spooks me the most.
Mm.
And I mean, like, a lot of people were immediately going to be like jumping up, like, oh no, but you said you don't like jump scare. It's the thing that Phasmophobia does. Yeah. The thing Phasmophobia does perfectly is the atmosphere, the sound design, mm-hmm. and like the darkness and like all that. Like, it's so good at having you unsettled before you start seeing the spooky shit that the spooky shit hits home a lot harder.
Also, a newer game, Lethal Company, which is super goofy, right? But the
company's so funny.
It is technically like a horror game because you get to go it in is. There with this all this atmosphere, and the chance of dying is super fucking high.
Yeah, because the monsters, they really do just kind of like, they just show up.
They just kind of and they come fuck at with you for a while, and like you can lose contact with all of your teammates just within spans of seconds.
But, yeah, but like so many of them do just like fuck with you. Oh, like they you're meant to know that they're there.
Yeah.
For a while before mm-hmm. they ever have the possibility of actually getting it. There's a moment. I know I said we were going to end things, but
okay.
There was a moment where me and Zach were playing and we were just like exploring, looking around and grabbing stuff. And I turned around and there's this big shadowy dude just behind Zach. Like, I couldn't even see him because it was already so dark. I just saw like this big pair of glowing eyes and then they fucked off.
Yeah. And I watched Mark and his friends playing it with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, God. And Zach was like, what? And he turned around. And of course, the thing was already gone. He never saw it. He's mm-hmm. still never seen that monster.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, there is a shadow man behind you. It's going to get you. And he's like, just don't tell me that.
What did
I just didn't
Sam
need
say?
To know.
He's like, the best way to get rid of this monster is to look at it. The best way to aggro this monster is to look at it. And
yep.
It's great.
So there was just like a whole lot of me. Like, I think that particular interaction does a good job of like, things that can be, I think Zach had a lot more horror out of it than even I did, because there were so many times where I would turn around and be like, oh God, there it is. And he would never see the thing because I had looked at it, so it ran off. So there's Zach like over here fucking questioning my sanity because he's never seen this monster that I'm so terrified of.
We got the ADHD where we're both looking at everything and forgetting it's there at the same time.
But yeah, that's very annoying. A good place to end it.
Yeah.
Next week we will GURPS. I will GURPS. I've read about like the core system looks simple and interesting, and I think it'll be a fun
one. We'll look for some grapes.
You got it.
For GURPS.
Thank you everyone for listening. Fan perks, not fan. God, my job has programmed me. Jesus, fuck.
Fan perks?
Patreon. Yeah, that's our store's
GURP
fucking
perks.
Rewards program.
There you go. Go
Patreon.
Ahead.
If you would like to support the podcast on Patreon, that would be patreon.com/d20dudes. Just $3 a month will get you a shout out, like we have for Ken Thomas, Molly, you are in that particular group, Jenny and Word, and Zam. Thank you guys for supporting the podcast. It means a lot. If you want to find us on Facebook or Twitter, you can twitter.com or facebook.com/d20dudes or @d20dudes on Twitter. You can find us easy enough. We got a Discord link down in the description if you want to hop in the Discord and say hi to us. We're just kind of being goofy in there all the time.
Indeed.
We're a bunch of silly fellas. We're just a bunch of little guys.
I do be shit posting.
We all do.
Mm-hmm.
And we play games and stuff in there pretty often. Like, if you ever just like want to pop in and watch me do some dumb shit in Barrow Trauma, I'm real bad at that game.
Mm-hmm. And I enjoy playing my own games and listening to other people die horribly.
Yeah, I die a lot. Thank you for listening. We will catch you in next week's episode. Goodbye.
Bye.